Believe in yourself, cause it starts with you, and then everyone else will believe you too. And if it looks like you're the only believer around, just keep on believing, don't put yourself down, just believe.
Our guest tonight grew up in Detroit, Michigan, and earned an engineering degree from MIT and a JD degree from the University of Michigan Law School. He has practiced law for 48 years and is a founding partner of a law firm. He's a world-class business rainmaker and a leader on many corporate boards. For the past 32 years, he and his friend, Dr. Mel Lester, have hosted huge tailgate parties before every University of Michigan home football game. His name? Ira Jaffe. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. I'm Jack Rasula. This is Anything Is Possible, and we're with a founding partner of Jaffe, Raitt, Heuer, and Weiss in 1968, Ira Jaffe.
Hi, Jack. Welcome. Thank you.
Honor to have you.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Can we start by talking about your childhood and your mom and your dad?
Of course. You want me to tell you my mom and dad? Well, they are wonderful people. They passed a long time ago, unfortunately. My father was a practicing lawyer in Detroit. His specialty was bankruptcy law. That kind of then wasn't looked on as favorably as it is today as a specialty, but he loved it. He was a graduate of, they called it Detroit College, which is the forerunner of Wayne. And you didn't need to get a degree, and he went to University of Michigan Law School, I think after a year or two, and practiced law in Detroit, Michigan, until he passed away. He had just turned 52.
Wow. What's the biggest thing you learned from Dad, Ira, and what's the biggest thing you learned from Mom?
Unfortunately, a lot of the times of learning with my dad, he passed away when I was 19, so... It came from his reputation, which was integrity. I would meet people, especially after I became a lawyer, who had practiced with him. And it was just wonderful that everybody would take me aside and say, your dad was a great guy. He taught me this. He took me in. He had in the days when he was practicing, which was really the years after World War II, and that young lawyers basically didn't earn anything. You'd come out and you'd be an intern. And he had a process where you would take in one or two lawyers, generally one, a year, and he would let them have their own cases. They'd give them the cases they didn't want to handle. And there's a whole litany of lawyers that I met when I started practicing law that said, you know, I started out working for your dad. And it went the whole spectrum of wonderful people, and it made me feel great. So I would say that's what I learned from my father.
And from your mom?
My mother was a very, I say quiet woman, and I don't mean that she wouldn't speak up and things like that, but she grew up in an era where she deferred to my father all the time. And... I learned to really have a lot of respect for her after my father died. Basically, she didn't have any money, and she ended up going and getting a job selling purses at the counter at Chandler's Shoes. And then after that, she became the Girl Friday, the only lady in the office in an orthodontist's office. And I'll tell you a funny story about her. My son is born, and he was premature. And so I call her at the office, and I say, Mom, you won't believe it. We've got a son. We're going to name him after Dad. And she says, she worked for me, Dr. Shaw. She had answered Dr. Shaw's office, and she says, thank you for calling, and hangs up on me. And that's because her work ethic was such that it was business hours. And as excited as she was that she had this grandson, she was not going to do it during business hours. She called back about 45 minutes later when she had a break. all bubbling and nervous and happy. So that was the type of human being she was.
You get an engineering degree from MIT, and then you go and get a law degree from Michigan. Why the change from engineering to law?
Well, engineering, frankly, to me, if you just have a bachelor's degree, wasn't the type of career I wanted to have. And so the choice was to go on and get a PhD or a professional engineering. And I wasn't really intellectually focused on that. A lot of my friends who had the same attitude were getting masters in business and were going to the two-year program straight out of undergrad school. And I found out that Michigan Law School, you could get through in 2 years then. It's no longer the case. And I could get a full ride to Michigan Law School, but Harvard Business School, and I couldn't get a full ride to. So Brenna and I were getting married, and we didn't have any money. And so a full ride sounded awesome.
While you were at U of M for law school, you've said you actually hated law school.
I did.
How did you get the first job out of law school?
Well, the reason why I hated it was not because of anything at Michigan, the University of Michigan, or the law school itself. It was that when you come out of an engineering school, there's a right answer. In law school, they teach by the Socratic method in most instances, which means that there is no right answer, at least in the classroom. And really on exams, they're trying to teach you to recognize issues. And so I found it, well, I was going to use a word we won't use on the radio, but very, very amorphous rather than specific. And so I didn't enjoy it at all, and I didn't want to practice law.
We're talking Ira Jaffe. When we come back, we'll ask him, after practicing law for 48 years, what has he learned about people? And I'm Jack Crystal, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. This is Anything Is Possible. I'm your host, Jack Crisula, and we're with the very famous Ira Jaffe. Ira, 48 years you've practiced law. What's have you learned about people in 48 years?
I really think they're very predictable, especially in the venue that I see them. In That makes it possible to kind of look at a set of circumstances and, at least in your own mind, kind of predict how it's going to come out. Now, that doesn't mean you're always right at all. And when I say predictable, I don't mean that I'm always right, because nobody is, and I'm not for sure. But they seem to fall in a mold.
Of all the people that you've helped, you know, gone up against, was there one or two that just stood out that you said, wow?
Well, I wasn't prepared for it, so one doesn't come to mind. There's a lot of people, especially people that I represented, that I said, wow, about. Because, especially those who were philanthropic. And, you know, a lot of people who have been very successful business-wise and made a lot of money are not. The ones that are and are truly philanthropic, not just because they want to see their name in lights, have really impressed me and made me feel good about the world.
Speaking of people, we're all flawed.
For sure. We're all flawed, that's very sure.
And what have you learned about dealing with flawed people?
Well, we've already said we're all flawed, so that means dealing with every person. But I think it really means, and I see it a lot in the practice of law, that there's an element of how am I going to come out? And that's natural. I mean, I'm not saying that I think the same way. I mean, we all have that as one of our baselines. We're always evaluating, how is that going to affect me? I don't think that's a flaw, but it sometimes leads people to, at least in my judgment, to not do the right ethical thing.
You've said in the past, Ira, and I quote, "In the legal workplace, there is one correct answer, the client's goal." What do you mean by that?
Well, it's one of my real philosophies in practicing law, and I think it's where a lot of attorneys, especially young ones or specialists, make a mistake. They get so involved in the legal issues that they see in a set of facts that they don't stand back and say, now, where does my client want to end up? Can they afford to get there? Are they the wealthy person in transaction? A very early lesson I learned as a very young associate, I was working at Miller Canfield Paddock and Stone, and I was asked to write a memo, and I came up with all the great things this auto supplier could do to the awful company that was on the other side of this fact question. And I came in thinking that I had knocked this issue, really, I was great. And I sat down in front of the partner, and he looked at me, and he read the memo, and he said, "You know, Ira, you just sent your client into bankruptcy. You pull all those, any of those things on General Motors," and this was in 1964, "and your client's in bankruptcy." Now, he had wanted me to write the memo about these issues, but he was trying to put it in the real-world context that you couldn't take on General Motors, and you shouldn't be saying those things to General Motors, because that was not the relationship in those days.
Let's go back to 1968. Tigers won the World Series. And you're a founding partner of a new law firm, Jaffe, Raitt, Heuer, and Weiss. How'd that happen?
Well, it actually was Jaffe and Snyder. It started in 68 as Jaffe and Snyder. Larry Snyder was a fellow who was a year ahead of me in school and had worked at my father's old firm. And I knew him through a number of circumstances, and we had talked many times about getting together if I ever left Miller Canfield. So it started as Jaffe and Snyder, and to this day there are still some people who call the firm Jaffe Snyder, because it went through some iterations as we added partners and name partners.
Talk to us about what Jaffe, Raitt, Heuer, and Weiss has become and what it is today.
Well, we've got a little over 100 attorneys, and I think we do a very, very good job as business lawyers. But I think the thing that makes me most proud of the firm is what happened when we had our 40th anniversary 4 years ago. I have to give credit to Rick Sussman, who became our managing partner and was our managing partner. And I think it may have been also Mark Winner, who's a public relations person. They came up with the idea that everybody should do 40 hours of charity work in honor of 40 years. And it was amazing. And the part that was amazing was what the staff did, because we didn't give people time off and we didn't pay them. They took this up and they worked on weekends. They went places at night. They did things at lunchtime. And we literally, other than, you know, excuse of somebody, had everybody do 40 or more hours. And it included 500 kids at the zoo and packing packages for the troops and on. But it was the fact that everybody stepped up and did it. And they did it on their own.
Ira Jaffe, when you get off the elevator on 25... and you walk toward that lobby area, and you see people sitting there, and you see people and your lawyers in different conference rooms, do you ever pinch yourself? Do you ever say, wow, how did this happen?
I say, if a lot of people ask me how I'm doing, I say I'm the luckiest dude in the whole wide world, because I am. I am the luckiest dude in the whole wide world.
How has it happened?
You know, anybody who doesn't say they were really lucky, their ego's too big. I mean, there are a lot of elements. I mean, I'm lucky I had a great wife who lets me work hard. And if she didn't give me that license, you know, you couldn't accomplish things. We've been very, very fortunate to have a group of partners who are just high quality, and we have staff. We have, I don't know the exact count, but I bet we have 15, 20 staff who have been with us over 20 years. My original secretary started with me at Miller Canfield, and she worked for me for 40 years. She worked a couple years at Miller Canfield, and then she became our office manager and that. And, of course, at her retirement party, my comment was, after 40 years, the boss gets to retire to Florida. And the boss is. I'm still here working. Beverly Wilson, a great lady, is retired to Florida.
You talked a few minutes ago about how proud you were 4 years ago at the 40th anniversary that everybody gave 40 hours of community service. Where did you have a passion and a real soul for community service. Where did you get that, Ira, Jeffy?
I don't know. I really don't know. You know, an honest answer is that it's just the way to be. I'm sure I got it from my parents.
A lot of people in these economic tough times have pulled back, and it's just, I just have to survive and worry about me. And maybe they were giving and helping before, but there's less of that today. What would you say to those people?
I think you have to break it down in different categories, especially in this town, especially people in the real estate business. A lot of unemployed people, especially who are in auto-related businesses. For those people, they're doing the right thing. They have to pay their bills. They have to take care of their family. And some of them are very embarrassed and don't want to admit that they can't afford. That group I feel very, very sorry for. Then, of course, which is the status of all things in life, you have people who can afford to do it and use the times as an excuse. And that's tragic today because as we have less money, and I see this in some foundations I sit on, that the need goes up and the contributions go down. And there's such a need in the hunger area and the jobless area and in southeastern Michigan that it bothers me that people who are lucky that haven't got hit and hurt by this don't give.
We're talking Ira Jaffe, who was named one of Michigan's top 100 lawyers in 2011, once again. And I'm Jack Rasul, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Welcome back to Anything Is Possible. I'm Jack Rasula, and we're with Ira Jaffe. Ira, for the last couple of years, you've been the chairman of the board of Beyond Basics. Tell us about Beyond Basics.
Well, I'm sitting here talking to you, Jack, and so you know a little bit about it. You know the background. We were standing probably about 6 years ago, I think it was. It had to be an odd year because Michigan's playing in Ann Arbor. But it was Michigan-Ohio State Saturday afternoon, and I'm standing there, and along comes my friend Jack Rasula with a nice young lady on his arm. And he stops at the tailgate, and we start talking, and she's shivering away, and she has like a pretty cloth coat on. The temperature's got to be freezing of some sort, and she's with this nice man who's going to make her sit out in the stadium for 4 or 5 hours in the freezing cold. But we start talking, and my daughter, who was at the game with me, sees me talking to this group, and she comes wandering up. And as it turns out, my daughter started a charity in Cincinnati, Ohio, called Most Valuable Kids. And she and Pam Good start talking about charities. And in the process, I learned that she is involved in a charity called Beyond Basics, which is a fantastic charity that teaches children in the Detroit public schools how to read in 6 weeks. At grade level or better. And so we gave her some toe warmers and hand warmers and shook hands, and to some extent, I forgot about it. And shortly thereafter, Pam, that's why she's great at teaching children how to learn, but also in running a good organization, Pam Good contacted me and said, you've got to get involved with Beyond Basics. Well, one of my passions is education in the city of Detroit, and especially underprivileged children, because I went to Roosevelt, Durfee, and Central in Detroit. And so I got exposed to Beyond Basics, and just said, if I'm going to give time and I'm going to give money, this is a great place to do it. It's a special place. It's a special organization making a difference in children's lives. And Pam came and asked me if I would be chairman, and I figured, well, I had enough stuff to do, even though I loved the organization. So I gave her kind of a list of things I'd have to see before I could consider being chair. And I came back from a vacation, I think a February vacation, and sure enough, there was a big loose leaf there with all the things I had asked for, and then I couldn't say no. So that's how I got involved in a great organization, which I really hope everybody could be exposed to, because it does such good work.
If you want to learn more, www.beyondbasics.org. And Ira, you've got a big fundraiser function coming up at Park Rest Galleries.
Right.
Gordon Vollmer, Albert Scaglione are putting it on Wednesday, the 26th of October. If you want to learn more, www.beyondbasics.org. You mentioned your daughter, Sherry. Let's give a plug for Most Valuable Kids in Cincinnati as well.
Most Valuable Kids is a great organization, too, and because it reaches the same children and it gives them a chance. Beyond Basics does it by teaching them to read, and obviously that I think that's more fundamental, and I'm not being negative in any way about MVK. But MVK pulls together unused tickets to things from the opera to a sporting event and matches that up with underprivileged children who would never have a chance to be exposed to these things, would never be able to go. And I believe Cincinnati chapter, which Sherry started, did 9,000 visits last year. So children write these letters of saying, I didn't even know there was a theater. They get to go to a sporting event. The Reds and the Bengals are really boosters. And then an average person like you or me, let's say you had tickets to the Fisher Theater downstairs and can't use them, can call, they pick up the tickets, the person gets a charitable deduction. And they have to do it through an organization, because you can't give an underprivileged child a ticket and say, go. So they work with the boys' clubs and the church organizations and Junior Achievement and all the other associations who have a mentoring circumstance, and a lot of these places use it as the reward for performance or achievement and other things like that.
If one of our listeners, Ira, writes a letter to your daughter, Sherry, asking for tickets to the U of M Nebraska game coming up, do you think Sherry can get tickets from her dad for that letter?
Well, there was a charity auction just 2 weekends ago, and they could have bid on 2 Section 1, Row 21 seats to the Michigan-Ohio State game because we were trying to appeal to Cincinnati residents.
So, speaking of...
Notice I didn't tell you about Nebraska tickets, did I?
No. Speaking of Sherry, there'd be no Sherry without Brenda.
That is right.
How did you meet Brenda?
A blind date. Met her on a blind date. I really liked her. And so I took her out. This was in August of 1959. And... Thanksgiving, coming home from school, I took her out and asked her out for New Year's, and I really like this girl. So it's Christmas vacation, and I take her out for coffee when I get back, and I get one of these Dear John conversations like, you know, let's be friends. You know, well, I was destroyed. I went out New Year's Eve, and you don't want to go out with your friend on New Year's Eve. you want to go out with your girlfriend on New Year's Eve. And, of course, it was relatively expensive, and so I had an awful time. And I didn't call her after that. And she called me, which girls didn't do in those days. And from then on, you know, we got married in 1961. We just had our 50th anniversary.
A couple months ago, 50th anniversary. Congratulations. Ira Jaffe, what's been the key to that glorious love affair for 50 years?
Yes, dear. We all know that answer.
Jumping back to the U of M, you have a love, a passion for U of M. Where did you get that, Ira Jaffe?
My father started taking me to the Michigan home games when I was 7, and we went to every game. He loved Michigan. He didn't just go to the football games. We would drive up and see a baseball game. Nobody went to baseball games. And we would go to every Michigan sport he could be away from work on. And he'd take me to Ann Arbor. And that was a long ride, you know. That was out Plymouth Road to get to Ann Arbor in those days from Burlingame, which is kind of near, not far from here. And then at 10, he started taking me to the away games. And he would close his law office. We would take off Friday morning and drive to Iowa and drive to Minneapolis. And there's nothing makes you feel more like a hero or a big shot to your friends than to tell them on Thursday, I won't be in school. This is when you're 11 or some 12. I won't be in school on Friday because I'm driving with my father to see a football game.
So did you start in 48 when Tom Harmon was a senior and won the Heisman?
I went to all the home games in 47 when they were undefeated.
So
that was Bob Chappius's year.
Yes. And then you meet this Dr. Mel Lester, and the two of you somehow decide to start a little tailgate that got out of control. How did that get started?
Well, first the tailgates got started for me. I joined the Victor's Club, which means you contribute some money and you get in a decent parking pass. And I had a friend who had a motorhome one day, and I said, listen, let's go in your motorhome. It's going to be rainy and cold. I'll bring the food and the booze. You bring the motorhome. And that's how I started tailgating.
And now you're back to the motorhome.
So, now I'm back to the motorhome.
We're talking Ira Jaffe, and I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. I'm Jack Krasula. This is Anything Is Possible, and we're talking to Ira Jaffe, who for the past 32 years, along with his great friend Dr. Mel Lester, have hosted huge tailgate parties before every University of Michigan home football game. You've had as many as 2,000 people show up for a tailgate. I think you've been on ABC, if I recall, an X number of years. What's involved each week, Ira Jaffe?
There are a lot of hours of preparation. Especially you're talking about the 2,000 person tailgate, that was on the little grassy hill right outside of Section 1 where the big steps were in the tunnel. And so with that location, you had to be happy to have people come by who really weren't invited, or you shouldn't have a big party in that location. But to prepare for it, as you asked, it would be probably at the beginning of August. You have to assemble all the materials and get big deliveries of things. And if you go in my garage, it looks like there's a perpetual inventory and a lot of things, but including liquor in one corner, paper goods in another corner. Of course, they're all blue and yellow. But and so first you have to prepare that. In those days, we probably had 40 coolers. I would get rent a truck, the large size from, you know, one of the rental companies. And Thursday night, I would have to go to the store to fill in, and also would get deliveries from two different markets. On Friday, I would have to take the day off from work and would pretty much be assembling and picking things up, loading the coolers, buying ice to put things in. And then Matt Lester, Mel's son, would have a three or four men who work for him, he owns apartment buildings, come over, and we would load this U-Haul truck on Friday. And then Saturday morning, I usually have to get up at about 3 because you have to make all the hot stuff, the coffees and the teas and the hot ciders, and I'd have to go pick up. I used to get something like 60 to 70 dozen bagel and 20 to 30 dozen donuts. So those were picked up Saturday morning. And then we'd go out there, and we'd have a crew. We'd take a motor home and the U-Haul truck and a car that would follow, and we'd set it up. We'd put up tents, you know, the pop-up tents, and then ultimately we had a full tent put up. We'd carpet the hill. And then when it's finished, you have to take it down, come back. You have to wash everything, make an inventory of what you do or don't have, and that would take up a good portion of Sunday. And then we'd start again.
Back in 2008, after practicing law for 45 years, you decide a new challenge. You're going to sit for the Florida bar exam, one of the toughest in the land. After 45 years, Ira, why?
A number of clients of mine, including one very successful client where I'm president of his operating company, holding company, moved to Florida, and I would go down every month to handle that and a lot of clients that spend the winter in Florida. And when you're negotiating a transaction or working on something, everybody, you know, is smiling and nice. And then if once in a while things wouldn't go so well in a transaction, it would get testy, a lawyer in Florida would look at me and say, you know, it's a felony down here to practice law illegally. And in my own mind, I said, no, I'm not doing that. And then I stood back and said, you know, these people have become Florida residents, a lot of them. And so we're in Florida and that. I said, you know, I just don't want to even be accused of doing anything wrong. So I'll become a Florida lawyer. So I opened my mouth and said I'd take the Florida bar. And then about 5 weeks before the bar exam, I panicked because I hadn't done anything to prepare. But that's why I took it. I took it because it was the right thing to do.
On most work days, you get up at 4 a.m., you head on out to Franklin Racquet Club for an exercise routine for a couple hours, then you're at the office by 8:30, and you usually don't get home till after 6, 7, 8 o'clock. Why do you work so hard, Ira Jeff?
I'm one of the lucky people where the word work is spelled Y-E-A-H. I give that answer a lot. That's why I was able to just roll it out. I love working. I mean, a lot of people, the word work is synonymous with I have to do it and I don't like it. For me, working is fun. I love it. I mean, if I have a day off, I work anyways.
You really love people.
Yeah, yes.
How does somebody learn to love other people?
Maybe some people love me. I don't know. I mean, you love people just because they're good. Most people are great.
There's a book I once read entitled Man of Steel and Velvet. And you are a man of steel and velvet. You know, you can be very strong, but you do it usually in a soft way. Not many men have both the steel and the velvet. How did you get that?
First, I'm not really sure exactly what it is, but I mean, I don't know. I think if you grow up with good people around you and nice people around you who are considerate, they build your personality. But that's why I say to you sincerely, I'm a lucky dude.
One of the many foundations you're very involved in is Max Fisher's Foundation. Tell us about Max Fisher.
Well, I'm not actually involved directly in the foundation because the foundation's trustees are only family members. I was asked, I think it's becoming 4 years now, to be the chief executive officer of the family office, which manages the affairs for the Fisher family and for the Max Fisher family. As you know, Max, during his life, we used to have a great joke because he played football at Ohio State. And the business school is the Max M. Fisher Business School at Ohio State. And there's some great stories about Max and Gerald Ford having a bet on the Michigan-Ohio State game every year. And so Max used to always like to rib me, especially if Ohio State won a game or two against Michigan. And I'm fortunate in the sense of his ribbing of me that he wasn't around during the last years when things have not gone Michigan's way. There were many, many years when they did, and he was around to enjoy that kidding.
last question. What advice would you give to our young listeners tonight?
I really believe that I'm stumbling a little, so I apologize. But remember that all the people around you are important people. So many times, which has helped in whatever success I have had, people who were like the third or fourth chair in a transaction, who were treated with respect, have referred matters, or have gotten up where they're now the general counsel and have asked for help. And I think that's true in all stations of life. Don't judge the other person by what their station is. Judge them because they are a nice person.
Ira Jaffe, you are a mensch, and this community is a lot better because of you. Thanks for all you do. Please keep up the great work.
Thank you.
Please join us next Sunday. Until then, I'm Jack Krasula. Thanks for listening. And make it a great week, because with God, anything is possible. Spall.